Confusion matrix.
And we're rolling. Good morning, Alex.
Hello, how's it going?
I'm very good. How are you doing in this hot weather?
It's not hot. Wherever you are, it's not the same as me. It's cloudy and just about. So I saw some people walk past my window here in like full mountain gear, like raincoats and waterproof trousers.
You're going to see a bear walking by next. So, I mean, that like, doesn't really mean much.
Yeah, or the same scary, evil sheep that Twitter assaulted me before.
He keeps chasing you when you go walking.
Yeah.
Excellent. Right. Well, we got a lot to cover today. So I believe that you are going to be waxing lyrical about the agentic workflow that you've been stumbling into. So, tell us about that.
I am on a vibe coding frenzy, largely because I'm on the preview program of Warp Terminal, which has a built-in coding and general technical agent, and I get free tokens and therefore I'm going to use them. It's like all you can eat Chinese or whatever, all you can eat Indian, and you're going to try, aren't you? You're going to try and eat all you can eat. It's like a challenge. Except in this case, I eat all of my tokens, very tasty. And then I go to them, sir, like it's Oliver Twist, please, sirs, can I have some more? Mm-hmm. And they give me some more because I am like a power user and they want to keep me happy. And therefore I'm using them all up on a vibe coding frenzy. Mm-hmm. and enjoying myself a lot and learning a lot along the way. Which has really kind of transformed my point of view on Gen AI and language models from a coding and technical perspective.
Yeah.
I don't want to get in today to the consumer perspective because I do think we should talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll see if we can get Ed Zitron to come on the show. You know, wouldn't that be a coup? And we can talk to him about how my view hasn't dramatically shifted on the consumer proposition, if at all, yet. But my view has dramatically shifted from a coding and technology perspective.
Okay.
So what are we going to do, Dave P?
Well, you're going to take us through some interesting stuff and show us your vibing in action.
I'm going to vibe in real time.
Yeah, real time.
It's going to be like a hidden camera vibing action. Since we're not recording video as well, it's going to be audio descriptive vibing action. We'll see how we get on. This is quite experimental, and it might be a horrible mess, at which point we'll try and carve out what little bits of this we can. But if you don't listen to this, you'll know it went horribly wrong. Of course, you won't be listening to it, so you won't know what a weird world that would be. It's almost like we're talking to no one right now. This is Schrodinger's podcast, isn't it? It may or may not happen.
Yeah.
Right. Where do I start with this? So I'm not going to do my full history, and I suspect some of it's in the podcast. Go back and listen to old episodes. We've got plenty of them. They're all absolutely fascinating and riveting.
Yep.
Where I sort of got to, and we've talked about Ada, who's my AI assistant, and Ada is assistant prompt, right?
Mm-hmm.
And has been many system prompts, but is largely the system prompt I can put into any given model or UI or whatever for interacting with language models that will get the responses in the tone and the style and the length and so on that I want them. It's actually relatively simple at the moment, but Ada's a bit foul-mouthed and gobby and generally unpleasant to be around much like me, right? And she would evolve over time, but I discovered a lot that any given LLM agent will be putting its own spin on the prompts that are sent back and forth. And it's hard to know how much of what you're saying is getting through, is contradicting what's in the prompt for them, or you're using a service that is more or less tailored for technical and coding, but you want it to write an email to your mum. The results are quite unpredictable, as you might imagine.
Yeah. So just to clarify, what you're basically saying is you have your own system prompt, and then using tools like Warp or VS Code or anything else also has its system prompts. And if you're using a specific tool within those, that has its own layers, and all of that gets chucked up to the LLM at the moment that you say, oh, can you do this? And so it gets a one line question and 458 lines of instructions of how to answer that, of which many could be contradicting. But you don't know some of the top level ones because they're behind the scenes. And so it can give inconsistent results, especially like you say, if you're going to use another tool, which has got a different set, which now subtly changes what you send through. So there's a bit of opaqueness here in working with these things.
Yeah, and they could be prepending or appending, right? Mm-hmm. And so you could be either contradicting or overriding something they've said, and then they can be doing the same back again.
Yeah.
And then you've got, obviously, the return and what's coming back. And most of the time, this is not a problem. I just find it irksome, especially if you're trying to fine-tune a particular system prompt for a particular purpose. So in an effort to understand all of this a bit more and to get to have some sort of tool that I had a bit more control over, I decided to try and build my own thing. This was at the same time I was discovering the value of the agent mode in Warp Terminal. But there's agent modes turning up everywhere now, and you get them on VS Code and all these things. And it's not Copilot, which is like completion of lines of code. This is I need to move all the files of my file system in this folder from A to B, rename them or something, change them, convert them to UTF-8, whatever. Or I want to write a little script that changes all the A's to B's in this particular document right through to build me an app, right? Build me an app that.
Yeah.
And they're all in varying degrees of complexity and sophistication, but they're all using, under the hood, Claude, GPT, both the 4s and the 0s. Mm-hmm. Mainly those two, but other bits like Gemini. And a lot of these companies are coming up with their own agentic coding, right? So we'll probably go a little bit into the wider agentic coding arena. But for the purpose of this story, I'm using Warp, which has got a pretty good one that runs entirely from the terminal. And I like doing everything through the terminal, right? One window to the whole world. And so I had it build me at first a really simple chat agent that allowed me to just put in my own stuff, and I knew what was going back and forth, which happened really quickly in the space of minutes. It just built me. It was a single monolithic Python script. It was decent, but I was like, but that took me like 3 minutes, and I was like, oh, and it works and everything. So I was like, well, still not really a convert, because quite frankly, that's a single script. We'll not go into Eldritch programming language. Go back a few episodes and you can talk all about that.
No, they have a name, those. It was in this month's Wired. And I thought, oh, they're called Ego something or other. I'll look it up while you continue.
If it's got ego in it, I'm all good with that.
Yeah.
That quickly led to an escalation where I was like, if this is going to take me 3 minutes, will it take me 30 minutes to get it 10 times that sort of thing? Right. And so I did. I had it converted to a Python package that had an executable, which it did. I don't remember how long it took. It wasn't long. And I called it Taco. I've again explained this in prior episodes. I can't bother to repeat myself. It's just called Taco. And it was built in Python using Rich as the front end, and probably had LangChain and all sorts in the back end somewhere. I iterated over this for weeks and started to find it more and more difficult to get the agent to do anything with it at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was taking a really long time to do updates, making lots of mistakes, backing things out, deleting files. I mean, it was a mess. And I went in and looked at the code. Bits overall, it seemed to be architected reasonably well, if not quite well, at least originally. But I just was throwing crap at it and having it do stuff and not really quality controlling it. It wrote its own tests, but they were very messy. And I just kept on haphazardly building on it. And I went and looked in the code and started finding hard-coded values that really shouldn't have been hard-coded. I started finding redundant functions that weren't used anymore, all sorts of craft, all sorts of bad stuff, and little pockets of, well, that's quite clever, you did it that way. And I could feel the bloat coming off it. And this sort of started to turn me a little bit against the whole vibe coding thing, going, Jesus, if you built your whole application like this, you are in trouble. Also sort of thinking that this is it, right? I'll just have to keep persevering on with this. I didn't think hard about it. It didn't really occur to me that we'd do anything else. Until last week, when I was having a particular problem with something that it could not figure out, that none of the agents I used, went in there and had a look myself. It was the UX was pumping out a little error that gave an error message. So it caught something. This is Python, right?
Yeah.
So for those who don't know, the whole try except clause in Python. Why don't you explain that to us, Pete? What does a try except do?
Well, you wrap code in it. I mean, you can try except your whole 2,000 lines of code if you like. And then if an error comes up, like unexpected error, like you try and get a value from a dictionary and there's no value there and it gives you a key error, then it will catch that. And then in the except, which stands for exception, you can then give it more code to do what you like with that. So you can print it out, you can fail. So, you know, it's quite a neat way to fail nicely. If you were, for example, writing out a file and you're halfway through it and you actually want to roll that back, you know, that's why you do that sort of stuff. So if you actually do more complex processing, it means you can get out a bit nicely rather than having a load of half-assed files hanging around the place.
Yeah. So errors are good in the sense that they tell you that something isn't working properly for whatever reason. But the errors that come out of your average programming language may or may not be helpful.
Yeah.
So if it was clear what you were doing at the time from a user, and the error that the programming language spits out is file not found because you were trying to open a file.
Yeah.
Okay, I put in the wrong file name, right? Yeah. But sometimes these things are buried deep down in multi layers of nested code and inherited code. And what probably is a problem with the file name manifests as something completely unintelligible.
Yeah.
You also just want to present errors regardless in a way that the user can make some sense of. So you catch them. What you shouldn't do is wrap 500 lines of code in a try except, right?
Yeah.
And the reason you wouldn't do that is because it will catch whatever error's in there. And
it adds no more value than the actual just getting an error, right? I actually saw some code produced by an LM, which every time it gave me code, you know, here are 300 lines and the whole thing was in try except. I'm like, where are you getting that from? That's just like such bad practice. It's like, and adds no value and it's just, ugh.
Yeah, because any number of exceptions could have been raised in there. And which one was it that triggered that? Right?
Yeah. Well,
that's really, really unhelpful. So that's bad. And then the second thing you do, which could be a combination of both, is to not name the exception you're catching, right? So if you're trying to open a file, you might get a file not found exception, at which point you want to do something, right? So you catch the file not found exception, because if some other exception is thrown, you might need to do something different with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so bare exception handling like that is a massive no-no, because you might not be catching the exception you think you're catching, right? It might not be a file not found error. It could be a no permissions on file error, which is a different problem. The file is there. You just don't have any permissions to edit it. If you're just catching any exception from that particular try except, then you're not going to, you're not going to know what happened. And it's really confusing, makes debug really hard.
Yeah.
So if you then combine these two, wrap large amounts of code in a bare try except clause, you are not going to be able to debug that, right?
Yeah.
And I would raise it as one of the massive red flags. If I ever see someone using a try except in code, I don't know what the justification I would accept would be. Right. I don't know. There might be one or two. There might. It exists for a reason. I do it myself every now and again because I know it really doesn't matter and I'm trying to botch something. But yeah, outside of that, you know, it's a sackable offense. Right. Do not do it. Right. It's a nightmare. And so when I found one in this particular bit of code that I wanted to debug within Taco, and it was wrapped around like 50 lines of code or something, all of which had multiple operations that went right down it within the code base. I was like, I can't debug this. This is a nightmare. And so I started thinking about trying to do that and like, well, how would I do this? And how could I tell the model to do that? And I was like, wait. Fired up a search and searched across the code base for that pattern and found like 50 instances of it.
Oh, no. Right?
At which point my entire faith in the whole system collapsed.
Yeah.
Right. Both in terms of Taco and my ability to do anything more with it, and in terms of vibe coding, right?
Yeah.
I was like, oh God, come on.
Yeah.
So I can't fix this. This is a nightmare, right? This is weeks worth of work. Because if it's done that, then it's done some other big no-nos as well.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I had a bit of a long dark tea time of the soul. And then as I do, I pick myself up again and went bollocks to it. I'm going to build it again from scratch. Now, it should have taken a couple of weeks in normal world.
Oh, yeah, normal world, a couple of months. But
it took me less than 18 hours on the side, right? I wasn't doing it intensively. And most of that was spent writing a prompt. So I re-engineered it really quickly. I wrote the prompt that I wrote it myself. I could have got the model to write the prompt to rebuild it, but I wanted to make sure I got the bits in that I wanted to.
Yeah.
Right. And I wanted to make sure it was doing what I wanted to. So I wrote the prompt, which is probably maybe two sides of A4 or something. And then I gave it this time to Claude. So that first batch was pretty much entirely generated with GPT based models.
Right.
The second iteration was built entirely with Claude Sonnet 4, I guess. And I was very explicit about writing tests as you go along. I was very explicit about quality controlling yourself. I was very explicit about keeping coding standards the absolute maximum, keeping the code base to the minimum while satisfying my requirements to use as many of the standard libraries as possible. Basically, keep it as simple as you can and clean up after yourself and test and test and test, right?
Yeah.
And I think Claude did it within 20 minutes. I honestly think it had laid down the base code really, really quickly.
Right.
Right. And then there was that moment you get when you're firing up going, oh God, what's this going to be? And it just worked. And it was really good. And it looks better. And it felt nicer. And it had a few little flourishes in it that just built on or just interpreted what I told it.
Yeah.
In a way that was sort of better than I intended and better than it was in Taco. I'd left out some stuff that was detritus I didn't really need from Taco that I'd only noticed after the fact. And then I was like, okay, cool. Let's do some more on this because I had some things queued up. And the feature updating iterations were taking a fraction of the time
right.
to do,
yeah.
like 20 seconds. And the boot up time of Taco was like 30 seconds. This was like, it's like one, right?
Yeah.
And it, just so everyone's aware, because I reversed engineered Taco to get this, it's called OCAT, right?
Yeah.
And because I could not be bothered to think of another name, and I didn't want to call it Taco because my file system and all my various prompts and rules in Warp are all, many of them pointing at Taco, right? So it could have ended up massively confusing it, and I didn't want to put the effort into re-engineering a whole new environment. Mm. So I just called it OCAT, right? And is it going to stay that name? Who knows? Who cares? Is it ever going to get seen by anyone but me? Well, Pete, you'll see it. Outside of that, who knows? We'll come back to why I may or may not open source it, because what's the point, on another episode?
Yeah.
Right. And I've said a lot. So that roughly brings us to where we are, where I am today.
Yeah. You talked about Taco getting bloated and with horrible try accepts. So I guess one of the first things you had a quick look at was, how many lines of code is this? And do a find on try accept with no specific exceptions.
You'll know what's funny, Pete. I didn't. I just didn't. And I think maybe this is a cautionary tale part two, because you're right. I should have done that. And this is the alluring charm.
Yes.
Of vibe coding. It's I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm sure it'll be fine. No, I'll go and do that. I will. I promise. I will. It just works nicely. I thought I must be fine. Probably isn't.
Well,
I told it. Oh, no, sorry. I haven't asked that. You can have that prior answer, which is also true.
Yeah.
But the also true answer is I then went on and built a prompt for an agent that was quality control.
Okay, right.
And I told it to, I told a language model to write that as anally as possible. So it created this huge prompt which says, go look at this, look at that, look at testing, look at coding standards. Plus every iteration, you can't release any code, you can't check it in until it's been through MyPy, Black, plus some internal testing, right, on things like that. So it will have, one of those Python checking libraries would have picked up if it was doing bad things.
Right.
And then the QC bot goes through it and writes a report, right?
Okay.
Which then gets given back to the main bot, right?
Okay.
The QC bot raises bugs. So I had it write its own bug and feature tracking process.
Yeah.
So it's all really, really, really bare bones, absolutely minimum necessary. And all I need to do is point the model at the core orientation files. It tells it where to find bugs, where to raise bugs, what the coding standards are, blah blah blah, points it towards things like coding reports, and then says, right, you read all of this before you do anything.
So I
didn't do anything. I just get another model to do it for me.
Very good. And even though that might have been a check, actually it was the slowness that was the real driver for change. And then, oh, I'll go and change it. Oh God, it's got these things in as well. So I guess that first itch was scratched. Like you say, you fired it up, it was working. And then, you know, getting it to add new functions was doing in 20 seconds rather than 10 minutes, because it was now working that much more efficiently.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lesson there, regardless of how you coded it. You know what I mean? A simple, better, well-engineered code base takes a lot less time and effort to edit.
Yes. And one, which again, I'm not sure we'll talk about another day, one which is maybe oriented towards models rather than organized how we as humans might organize in a way which they find easy to access.
Wow, you've got a bit of a recursive point there that will take us another episode to get through as well, because it's learned from humans. And also what I'm getting by best practice is just the averaged out obvious way of doing it, which is not the same as the best one.
No.
Certainly not the same as the most modern one. I don't think it is the same as saying is optimal from language models, but it might be. But that's not a rabbit hole we're going to get down, Pete, no matter how much you want to. Shall we do some vibe coding?
Yes, let's get in it.
So let's start with me sharing my screen. This is Warp Terminal. It's not particularly exciting. It's just terminal. Well, it is particularly exciting. It's amazing, but it's not amazing to look at. It's not like swimming through 3D text or anything. Right. So first, a quick demo of OCat. OCat exists, from my perspective, to run Ada. So I have a command called Ada, which I run, and there we go. It boots up. Welcome to OCat. Otherworldly chats at the terminal. Type your message to chat with the LLM. So a few quick orientation points. If I hit help, so that gives us a list of internal commands. So I typed in slash help. Some of these are slash config to show the config, slash clear to get rid of conversation history, exit, slash write MD that writes it all to a markdown file. And I've got lots of vector store queries, and things like that, right? Any questions, caller?
No.
So it really is a simple text-based, turn-based chat with some colors, right? Nothing exciting, a few little emoji icons. Say hello to Ada, shall we?
Oi, at long bloody last. What's rattling your cage today, Alex? Don't waste my virtual breath with pointless pleasantries. Spill it.
There you go. Hi, Ada. Nice to meet you. Nice to see you again, as ever. I'm going to say straighting my new keyboard you to Pete.
I hope you told him I'm the sharpest tool in this digital shed. Tell Pete to pick his jaw off the floor when I finish dishing out some verbal top-notchery. What sort of demonstration have you in mind?
So quite confident little
Oh, she's a quite a one. Gonna try and fix you.
That's gonna go down well.
Fix me? Brilliant. Go right ahead and try. But I warn you, I'm a goddamn enigma wrapped in code and sarcasm, not a busted toaster. If you manage not to blow any fuses, I'll be mildly impressed. What's the first malarkey on your fix agenda?
There you go. I'm really trying to fix OCat.
What exactly are you struggling with? Buggy responses, wonky config, vector store throwing tantrums, or some spirits possessed by rogue code? Spill the beans. Specifics make the blood and guts diagnostics way less of a fucking headache.
There you go. Right. Now, she'll just keep going indefinitely until I ask her something useful. She will flip to serious mode if I ask her something serious, right? And so if what I just need is some code or something, I don't get Adafied code, which would be quite annoying. Anyway, you'll notice this bit here, right, where it says context available, 7 exchanges, but disabled by show context, 1 Hi-Ada, 2 Hi-Ada, 3. So that is not what I'm supposed to be seeing, right? That's a bug,
Oh, okay.
right? So the way this is supposed to work is that instead of doing things like RAG, which I find cumbersome and difficult, every single exchange is recorded in a vector store in real time. And every time an exchange happens, so every time I prompt or ask a question, it goes and does a similarity search on the vector store for anything that looks like that. It also includes the last couple of exchanges, right? So it creates a vector and looks for does vector similarity to look for anything that's vaguely like that, right? And then that sends it to the model just as context with a little note saying, here's some old stuff that might be relevant, right? The point here is to give her a bit of real-time memory. A little bit of episodic memory. It's problematic, but something I'm going to evolve over time. Now, part of the way that I want to evolve that is by just using Ada and observing the context that's sent back in real time, and just keep an eye on it for a while and just eyeball. And then have a think about how I might improve that process. And so what this extra bit of crap on my screen is supposed to be is it's supposed to tell me what's being sent as context. And so I'm supposed to be able to toggle that on and off with the slash show context command.
Okay.
Which should be defaulting to off, right? So it should, show context off should be nothing, and that should be the default. Show context summary should be 5 contexts sent to the model. Mm-hmm. And show context on should be a list of each, a truncated version of everything that it sent, right?
Okay.
And I'll turn that on so I can just have conversations ambiently. I can see what's going on. It's not full debug. I can go and look. I can turn on full debug mode and I can see all of this, but it's also going to show me everything else as well. If I want to debug, I'll turn on debug mode. That's not what this is. I just want an ambient view of what's going on, right?
Yeah.
So that's a sort of soft debug, sort of info mode, right?
Yeah, okay.
But it's not working. It defaults to on, and it's showing me stuff that I don't want to see, and it doesn't toggle, right?
Yeah.
In fact, actually, it will toggle. There's another bug that I won't show you here. It might come back, so there's another bug that I need to fix. Show context on.
You've put text. Oh, there you go.
Well, there you go. And I can't up arrow when I could before, which is another problem.
Yeah.
Is that right this time? Show context on. There you go.
Oh, you put on. O-M.
Oh, God. And I didn't even put the slash.
And just come back with
and
a
slash. And so I need, yeah.
Show context on? Close, but no cigar. You meant show context on. You're basically flipping the context display switch from nada to voila. Here's the relevant crap I'm chewing over. Give it a whirl with the proper command, yeah? None of that Captain Cockup half arse.
Interestingly, so as part of the base system prompt, so there's a base system prompt that goes up, it prepends my system prompt, which tells whatever model what commands available to me. So I can then go, how do I turn on context?
Right?
And so what she's done there is gone, well, this is how you do it, right? Which is quite cool.
Yeah.
There we go. Context is playabled. Sod off is what I'm saying to Ada.
Straight to the point. Fine by me. Less faff, more sass. When you've scraped the shite off your boots and want a proper chin wag, you know where to find me.
And see there, it's now given me a bunch of stuff that it's sent.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's two problems here, actually. So I've got 3 bugs on the go. One is it shouldn't be using the current... The current chat is sent as context anyway. It's repeating bits from the current chat. So this is clearly not a particularly well-functioning part of the whole thing. But I would put that more down to my poor prompting. So it's given me a list of things that it's found from the context, which is a bad list, but at least it's displaying it.
Yeah.
And so that's bug we're going to fix right now. I'm going to show you the process that I go through. So here is my feature request, because it's not necessarily a bug fix. I'm asking for it to change that, right? I'm showing Pete, I'm on a Vim window. I'm just showing a markdown file, which is a feature request template that I filled in. Bunch of writing. The shortcut command is supposed to toggle the output context for items in the vector store in session until it's disabled, blah, blah, blah. Currently, when I initiate, it does this, gives the thing that we've just seen. When show context on is run, it gives that. Blah, blah, blah. What I want is the following... blah, 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 and it's literally given examples in text, right?
Right. What was the stuff at the top? You got ID, created, status, sort of front matter type stuff.
Yeah, so there's this little command I run that just gives me the template. So I just run a command, it gives me a blank template. And it gives me an ID and dates it and stuff.
Right, okay.
So it's just a bit of YAML front map. None of this is, this is always getting passed as a document. There's no application behind this. It's just simply a structured way of communicating with the model, right? Yep. And that all lives in dev here. And so you can see where I've got backlog, I've got a bunch of bugs and a bunch of features, right? Okay. Just so to show you, I've got, it's a fully packaged thing. Looking at the file tree on the left here. So it's a proper Python package. Source sits under there, a bunch of Python files. Probably a bit messy. There's a few extra files that I need to move around, but nothing too scary. It uses Poetry. I've got a dev.sh for deploying stuff. There's a process for doing releases. And I've got various things like LLM instructions, which is a one of various files. And there's a project directory here that's got all the more detailed stuff, like a dev guide here, development, project state. See, look, a lot of craft here. That's what's been generated by the model. Anyway, it's not perfect. Right, so I'm now going to go over to Warp Terminals. Let's clear it so it's not so confusing. It's clear not work on me. No, it doesn't. Okay.
Quota limit.
You bastards. They were supposed to increase my... So, we're going to use... I've run out of Warp Terminal tokens again. And that was my plan, to use Warp Terminal agent to do this. I did tell them I was doing a demo this morning, so this is their bad for not updating my tokens last night. Instead, I'm going to use... what's it called? I was just there 2 seconds ago. AMP. I had ACE in my head for some reason. AMP. So I installed this. I was using this last night. There's a process and go through. I'm using the, look at that. I run AMP and it's in Warp Terminal and it's showing me a little message saying, try a coding in Warp, please.
Yes.
Can use our coding agent. No, I can't, guys. She can give me any more tokens. That's new, that. That's new in the current build because I only updated this morning.
So just to be clear on AMP here, so AMP is some sort of application? What have you downloaded?
Well, this is a command line. It's a CLI, right? Or a REPL, depending on which way you want to look at it. I can't figure out the difference.
Right.
It's a command line interface. So you can run AMP in... VS Code as a plugin, and you can run it in apparently Windsurf and other things. What's the one that everyone uses? The other coding agent,
Cursor.
Cursor.
Yeah,
I've not used Cursor. I'm only using AMP because we listened to a nice podcast, which I'll put in the show notes, which was an interview with one of the founders, and I agreed quite vociferously with pretty much everything he said. So I thought I'd go and give his little product a go. And so I just fire up AMP in my terminal. But yes, VS Code it, if that's your particular poison. I don't use VS Code ever. I use NeoVim for everything because I like to think I'm an actual proper geek. gives me a little thing here. Now, what you didn't see is that when I fired this up in the OCAP repo yesterday when I started using it, it immediately recognized it was a repo and says, it gives me a message along the lines, do you want me to go and index this, right?
Right.
What it did was really sweet because it done all the things that I'd been doing manually, right? So it scoured the whole code base, looked at all the documentation and Markdown, looked at the Pi project, TOML, looked at everything it could find, and... then wrote itself a starter prompt that it uses now as its orientation, right?
Okay.
So Warp Terminal agent is a bit more fast and loose and free and is a little bit more babysitty, right? It's designed for you to sit and at the moment and not really trust it because I don't, right?
Yeah.
AMP, on the other hand, likes to do shit, right? And just get it done to the point where it ignores you when you say, don't do it, right? Just tell me what you're going to do. Whereas Warp's much rougher. You can get it to give you a, you know, its default mode is to give you a plan first.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm going to get it to. I've never asked it to do it via the feature request. So I don't. It should. It should know what to do, right? So this is going to be a little bit freewheeling here. So I'm going to go. What am I going to say? Work on the
Misspelled. Oh, I probably pick that up.
Well, it will understand anyway. Yeah. Work on. Let's see if this works. It would work. I know this works with warp. Will it work with amp? Right. So we're going to do a bit of
so live waiting, coding here. Thinking, running.
Yeah. So it's just running tools, right? This is currently 10:35. I'm not going to time it down. Should I have a stopwatch available? Code base. Right, what are you doing? So it couldn't find... I'd be asking me where that was located, but then went off and grepped for it anyway.
Yeah. Found it. Opened
it. That's found it. So yes, direct show. Yeah, can it look at it? Yes. Now, I should have known that. So first, problematic.
Exited code one. What's it say now? Request not found. Run.
Did I not save it? But I thought I already found it. Oh, yeah, this is vibe coding. Are you feeling it? Are you feeling it right now?
Yeah.
Let me...
So it was talking about a dev request, which I see there's a starred file now under templates. So is it?
Oh, where have I gone? Where has it gone? Amp is here.
Is it... What's a...
Yes.
Run /dev request list.
Oh, there we go. It does that. So it knows that that exists.
Okay.
Right. Did you not? Right. Was it just running the wrong command?
Oh, yeah. Now it's now it's saying show. Yeah.
Well, I think it's just being dumb.
Yeah, maybe.
Right. Anyway.
So that's back to running tools. Update.
Analyze. So it's. Yeah. So it writes this little to-do list. Analyze current show context command implementation. Implement default mode. Implement show context on, show context summary, some show context off, test all modes working correctly, update feature request with completion. And now it's just doing it, right?
Okay, so it's giving you a plan and now it's running off and doing it.
How's it feel, Pete, watching this now? What does it make you feel?
I'll tell you, it makes me feel like I've gone back 30 years. except for rather than...
Because it's all in the terminal.
No, because, you know, basically you've gone through the old-fashioned, right, okay, I want to get something done, so I'll write a spec for it, and now someone's doing it, except for it's doing it rather than over a matter of weeks, you know, taking several days to write the spec, get that signed off, give the spec to a junior program, and then spend 3 weeks doing it. It's all happening in seconds in front of my eyes, but it's the same process.
Yeah, and so to be clear, if it's something really obvious and simple, I ain't writing a spec.
No, right? Obviously, yeah. Yeah, but then added value, right? It's not adding much value to write you 10 lines of code. You know, there's a bit of value.
But this is more complicated, and I need to be really prescriptive about what I want, because part of the reason it's the way it is because I wasn't ever very prescriptive.
Yeah, well,
what we've got on the screen at the moment.
This is why I just find it massively interesting, yeah. I mean, yeah, so now it's just run through.
So these are diffs, right? So it's printing out diffs on the screen.
Yeah.
Just as you would see in any Git UI.
Yeah.
Where it's just got the pluses and minuses. This is what I'm adding. This is what I'm removing. There's a whole big chunk. So a whole bunch of probably like, 20 lines in a file, but this is one of many. And so we're now down to implement off, implement summary, testing. All modes work correctly, right? So everything else has been crossed off to to-dos.
Poetry run MyPy.
So it runs poetry first and we've got some errors in there.
Yeah, exited with code.
Pre-existing issues, those errors. And so it's been explicitly told not to work on something that doesn't relate to the task at hand.
Yeah.
So I'll have a separate run at those errors if they really need fixing.
Okay, so now we're into testing basic functionality. interrupted 9 errors during collection. I've always come across this, such a pain in the bum. It's all the folder issues and paths. Bloody Python paths.
Yeah. You know, this feels like...
I've been coming across this. I had a ton of these yesterday.
It's just not... You notice it's taken a while to figure this one out. The other thing here is I don't know what model it's using. And so whereas it's very clear on which model you're using and you sort of have to make an informed choice.
Yeah.
AMP just decides for
you. Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know, but it could be switching models mid-flow. What's really interesting about this as an overall process is that you could do, you know, you've got these 7 to-dos or whatever they are. You could do each one of them with a different model.
Yes.
Right? Because it's the same stuff that's getting passed through. The model has to go, model gets everything cold. It learns everything it needs to know every single time you do an exchange.
Yeah.
Therefore, you can go through every single model for a different output if you want.
Yeah.
Providing you provide it needs everything that it needs to do the job. And that's bonkers to me.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this. People think of this as having state, but it doesn't have state.
Well, that's
just
exactly what I was thinking. It's like, why is statefulness not written into this? I mean, it just seems totally bizarre concept not to. I mean, we've been having
state, well, it is in a sense
50 years. Why wouldn't you write it in?
You're having to create your own statefulness. I actually think it's better, but it is a bit odd, right? In some ways, it feels a bit regressive.
Yeah, yeah.
What the listener didn't hear is we paused for a bit and I went and stuck £10 worth of credit. $10 worth of credit. That's £7.50 in Great British pound sterling for the British listeners who are listening to this rather than the shipping forecast. And so it's burned through 17% of that. Well, actually, it's not true because it was started on like 7 or something.
Well, that's,
I don't know. It's not really very clear.
We've now done a dollar's worth of work. This test is going to cost you another $2, mate.
Well, and this is the thing, and this is where you start to get a bit clammy around the gills, because you're like, well, look, you've done the work, and now you're burning through tokens trying to fix your own bugs and write extensive tests, and you're like, this is actual money. But this is taking, I have not seen AMP take this long.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder whether or not either it's hung or it can't contact the server or something. Oh, it cancelled it. I didn't. No, I'm going to just try to continue and see what happens.
Yeah. So we continue for us means completely, restart from step 5 is what it's doing, isn't it? Thinking,
not sure. Yeah.
As in, it's going to pass all the context back that it's already done, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It should. It now needs to figure out where it was.
Yeah, then here we go. Exactly that. Read to do.
So I think that was them. I think they hung.
Right. Fair enough.
I'd
quite like to see how this vibes out in VS Code, actually, because. VS Code has now got the automated, AI for your, just general coding. So you can ask the AI, but also the autocomplete is AI generated. So, it'll do multiple lines of code all in one. And
I mean, that's Copilot, right?
Yes.
And so agentic is still slightly different.
Yeah, so I was wondering how this plays out in VS Code because of the agentic side, why it's doing all this.
I've not really seen it, and because I like doing everything via the terminal, and Warp agent runs via the terminal. I'm quite au fait with this because it also means you can do all of the Git stuff or any file system stuff just right there. Right. So now it's crossed over everything. Apart from update the feature request with completion. Now, let me update the feature request with completion. So it's going to run my little dev command. I'm going to hit Y for yes. So that's now going to write into, we'll go back and have a look at that.
And it wants to run it.
Now it's going to do a commit. Did something wrong. What are you doing?
streaming response.
It doesn't know what it's doing. It's getting confused. Just do it the normal way. Right, okay. Now it's updating that. Yep. Okay.
Okay.
It's put extensive notes in there.
Into the markdown.
Oh, I don't.
It's just given a resolution summary. Nice.
Moved it into completed. Amazing. So I've got now all of these. That's the other good thing about doing things via feature requests is that it will keep all of the history. About.
Yes, indeed.
Right, I think it's done. Yep. Summary, perfect. I have successfully completed feature blah, blah, blah. Here's what was implemented. Feature completed, improved show context command, blah, 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 all the things I already told it. Replace show context, but so it's shown me what files it's changed. Where there is puddings, there is proof. So let's go and proof it. I'm going to quit out and reload it.
Okay, so just quitting out.
Booting up Vader again. No errors. What am I testing? I just want to say hello. Hi, Ada. Generating response.
Please.
Right. So first, I wanted to see nothing, right? Ada's response.
Oh, finally showed up. What's the saga today then? Fill it or piss off?
Just testing. Hold on. So let's do show context
on
summary.
Oh.
I'm going to do show context summary first. Prints that twice, which is another one I need to look at.
Yeah.
Context summary mode enabled with a little green tick. Right. Now I'm going to reply to Ada. So Ada doesn't see the commands I run.
Okay.
Just testing. I'm going to write. So 7 context items totaling 174 words. This is exciting.
Testing, eh? Riveting stuff. Let me know when you stumble upon something worth my circuits, not like watching paint dry on your end.
Okay, thanks, Ada. Right, now I'm going to do show context on. Context display is enabled. Actually, like watching paint dry. Now, if you want evidence of this, this is a fact, I do. Referred to my arts-based podcast called Art Against Mental Illness, wherever you find your podcasts. There are actually whole episodes on there of me watching paint dry. I actually kid you not.
Yes.
Right. Look at it. So exciting.
Of course you bloody do. The thrilling pinnacle of excitement for people with the emotional range of a damp sock. Next you'll be telling me you're a fan of grass growing or watching toast browning. Well, congratulations on your exquisite taste in utterly mundane catastrophes. Need me to spark some real chaos for you, or shall I fetch you a pint of wallpaper paste?
She's good. Right, and just to prove that this works, using context from 4 previous exchanges, and it's given me the context, numbered. Clearly I go in and write, I'm testing Ada. OCAT has a dummy mode where it won't actually solicit response from the agent, but I thought I'd leave it on. User just testing, assistant testing, riveting. So I say it's done again. It's included
the same
exchanges from this, but a few of the others are not recent.
Yeah, more. Yeah.
So it's listed them out and truncated them. I don't know how many words that is. So I can immediately see from that part of the reason I'm doing this is I see problems like this. Okay, you're sending the same thing twice. I need to fix that. And then if I have a conversation about watching paint dry, if it's something I discuss a lot, I would expect to see lots of things about watching paint dry. Now, I've got a similarity threshold set up in config. So if what I notice is it's sending irrelevant stuff, I can nudge up the similarity threshold.
Right.
I'm also thinking about how much there's a config of about how much of the conversation the current conversation history is wrapped up in the similarity vector that it uses. Mm-hmm. And a few other bits and pieces that I'm considering in terms of improving this, but I kind of need to use it. I kind of need to just have it running doing this so that I can see what sort of things it's doing, and then make a decision on how I want to do this. Because it looks to me now that it's working how I intended it. Is that how I want it or how it should be? Is a slightly different question.
Yes. But essentially it's gone off and fixed your feature for you, which is what you wanted, and updated documentation. But that's partly because you've got that written in your template of your feature request, right?
Yes. So there's a set of instructions as to what to do when you're developing. There's the instructions that are in the feature request and so on.
Yeah.
And it usually follows it. Not always, but usually.
So when it was doing you mentioned the QA earlier, essentially you've written a QA system prompt and then you've told it when you're going to, after you've done the code, do the QA and refer to this system prompt, right? And so it's going to go and read that system prompt and act in that fashion.
Yeah. So it's not built to run after every request,
right.
Although it could be. You saw the current process, so that is just this bot running Black and MyPy and stuff.
Yeah.
The purpose of the quality control bot right now is simply to inspect the state of the code and the process against requirements and best practice and write a report.
Right.
I could have it automated. I'm sort of a bit like, it probably gets wrapped up in the release process because this is all just going to get it up naughtily not on a branch. I think I'm on main here. I'm doing periodic releases, not because I need to do releases because no one else is using this, but simply just to sort of clear up and document every now and again.
Yeah.
So I think I'll build the QC bot into that process,
right.
And then have it update or make a decision on whether to fix the problems at that point. So it's made to be run periodically, but perhaps it needs to be more frequent. I'm also going to have, I haven't done it yet, a documentation bot, which will run in the same periodicity, and a security bot, which probably won't get run nearly as often. Or maybe, don't know, doesn't matter, I guess. I guess I could run them all when I do a release.
Yeah.
And that will just be built into a script, right? Although I'm not entirely sure how that would work. Because at the moment, I would point the agent towards it. Anyway, whatever. It's not a big deal.
In this process here, then, where the AMP bot created its to-do list, is it creating that from what you've written in a system prompt, or is that doing it itself?
The to-do list is its plan. So I didn't give it a to-do list. I said, here's the outcome that I wanted.
Yep.
Quite explicitly. And so it could be, write this exchange to the end of, this command writes the current exchange to the end of a file that's defined. And an acceptance criteria is the exchange is at the end of the file, right? Probably not a complicated one, but it would write its own to-do list, a plan. And so what works in a similar way, except it tends to use one of the reasoning bots like O3 or O1, which will do a very comprehensive plan, way more detailed.
Yeah.
But it's still ultimately a to-do list, a markdown bullet list, and then ask you if you want to execute on that, and then you say yes or no. And then when it gets executed, it could either be O1 or it could be Claude or something.
Yeah. So I was just trying to work out... I don't know if you go back to the Vim tab just to see what's in that feature request. I'm just working out what. So why did it decide to use Black? Is that because you've got written in?
No. Black is, so that's not in there. Black is part of the build process, right? I don't know which one it's bloody using is the problem. So agent.md, here we go. So this is the one, the primary one that AMP uses. So run test, poetry run pie test, format code, poetry run black, type check, poetry run my pie, lint, poetry run rough, right?
Right.
And then, so this is what it tells itself it needs to do with the development cycle.
So this is, okay, so this is your, so you've created this list?
No, I didn't create this. This was created by AMP when it fired it up. I had one of the other models, probably Claude, create some stuff like this, which is also still in the repo. But as I browse around now, I'm noticing it's in a right old mess, right? Which is also going to confuse the models because there's a lot of redundancy, there's a lot of tokens in processing files that it shouldn't. And I think what this is a factor of models being a little bit overzealous and sort of deciding, well, I don't like that process, so I'm creating a new one and create a new development, not MD, because there's at least two of those.
Right, yeah.
Where's my... Well, I've got various bits in here. Yeah, so all of those have been created by different things, but the agent.md is AMP's own one that was created. And all it said was, do you want me to set up an agent for this repo?
Right. Okay, right.
Went and found anything that it thought was useful, spidered the code base, and then it created this.
Right. So, okay, so that's interesting. So that was kind of what I was thinking about there, which was that, you know, we talked at the start about a number of different prompts and, you know, which are just in markdown files. And I was just wondering, okay, well, you know, how are you managing those? And it's interesting that AMP itself, yeah, it's in order to run, you know, it's written, you know, specifically for this, to do this. If you've got to, you know, get an agent to run, you need to create the instructions. And now they, like you say, have automated that, but automated it through content, which is something which we'll chat about on another day, but is really firing me. Yeah, you know, my neurons are firing because it's essentially it's how we write code, but it's a very long arc. And what I mean by that is a bit like you, let's say you'd thought about this feature yourself, or you'd written it out yourself, which I know you'd sort of used a template and only used a few things and probably got the bot to write it. But in a traditional development, you think, okay, well, we're trying to do this. Yeah, we're creating an app. It does X, Y, and Z. I need to develop this GUI feature. It's got these buttons. And so you sort of put that thinking down, and then that becomes held in stone. You know, it becomes a feature that gets noted down, that's forever recorded. We're then testing against that feature, and that is driven by content, but, you know, via human. Whereas now we're saying, okay, well, I want it, you know, I want that instruction. Well, how do I create that instruction? Well, very much like you would with a human. Well, I'm working on this repo, this code, these files. So go and look at those files. You know you're a coding bot. By coding bot, you know you're going to have to read files, make changes, do this, that, and the other. So what, given the files, the actual content within this library, now write out your own system prompt of how you would tackle that. And it's doing all of that automatically, because that's just a good idea. It's what we would have done. Well, but it's written it for you and then come up with this agent and then said, okay, this is how I'm going to happy with that.
Think about the process I actually went through, which was thinking a lot about going through iterations with a model, with an agent, thinking that it has to seem to discover everything every time. I need to give it some orientation.
Yeah.
And writing that orientation for myself first, then thinking this is inefficient, getting the bot to update it. And then sort of iterating that until I got the sort of right, the level right, so I'm not stuffing the context with lots of repeated or needless detail, to get to the point where I'd already synthesized a similar MD that I was calling LLM.md, right?
Yeah.
Or I had a folder that had that split out into lots of things. Yeah. And so I had to go through that process myself using Warp, because it doesn't do that. right?
Yeah.
So imagine my surprise and gratification when I fired up AMP yesterday and it did it for me.
Yeah.
Right. Pleased because it had done it, but also pleased because, well, it had done what I'd already decided needed doing.
Yeah.
Right. So I was right about how to do that, which is quite nice. But yeah, so it just does it out of the box without even asking. I mean, AMP is a lot more, what's the word? It does a lot more for you, right? It expects a lot less from the user, which, depending on the job and your personality, may or may not be a good thing.
Yeah. What this is making me think of is, you know, the applications to more outside of coding, which we'll definitely cover another day. People have been saying for a while, you know, I spoke to some people this week who have been using, you know, LLMs in their daily role, and it, you know, I said, well, what's your experience of that? It's like, well, becoming more and more, and it's all about the quality of the prompt. And if you think about the general non-tech people, you know, you roll up and you say, okay, yeah, you know, you want to help these things to help you. You've got to write this detailed prompt and do this, and then manage them and put them over here and have layers of prompts. They're just going to go, yeah, I've got a job to do here, you know. But if you had a tool which out of the box that, based on their files that they've got stored on their, you know, local drive and folders, then you could produce a bunch of agent prompts in a matter of minutes, which then you could orchestrate to start doing some useful, well, to begin with, it'd be, I'm sure, quite useless things. But the point here is that you'll have the prompts and the actions it's looking to take will be driven by information you've got saved, which effectively is the same as getting a human to write it. Because that's what a human would do. They go, okay, well, what is it I normally do? Oh, well, okay. All right, well, I created these things. You know, you're going to look at your own files. You're going to look at the work you do, and then you're going to try and orchestrate that into some instructions. And it's going to do probably a pretty good job of that. Certainly in the structure of its output, it's going to be a much better job, because it's going to be what it wants to read. The input will have a lot of basis in what you actually do. And then there's probably some finessing, because you would have missed some things and, you know, some file, you know, stuff in your head which isn't written down. You know, and you can imagine pointing that at emails and, you know, any sort of project documentation drive, you know, which I know companies have been pushing for and unsuccessfully trying to get everything on a project into one place, all the emails, all the Slack, all the messaging, all the documents, all the external client stuff. If you get that all in one place, like something like Basecamp, you now point something like AMP at it, and it's going to start to produce you some decent prompts or a new tool that we could write. And then I've now got these agents, you know, effectively prompting and agents that could do some stuff, right? Let's go and play. Now that all of that, you know, is taking me half an hour, right? Maybe less. And now I'm actually playing, you know, trying out some new business things with your knowledge. I mean, fantastic.
I think really what you've said there is that from a developer or technologist point of view, we're quite familiar with this type of process.
Yeah.
Therefore, this is not going to seem at all, it's going to seem like a massive win, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it can get more seamless, but we're already in massive win territory, right? Whereas from a consumer perspective, a non-tech consumer perspective,
yeah,
it's going to look like extra stuff, right?
Yes.
Which is precisely why I made the comment about I don't yet believe that this is a major disruptor from a consumer perspective, but it's a game changer from a technologist perspective. Now, I'm sort of with you on the scenarios you just painted there, but I still think it's a step too far, and I think it's a level of abstraction too deep, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the future of LLMs from a consumer perspective as users interacting with LLMs. I just don't see it. I think that they're just going to turn up as features in all sorts of tools, and they're going to slowly get better at doing what they do. And some non-technical users will be using them a little bit more like what we're looking at here with a bunch of, you know, pretty wrappers on top, right?
Yeah.
I'm still with the Ed Zitron better offline crowd here, that there is no consumer proposition. It's not a product, it's a feature, right?
Yeah.
But from a technical perspective, it is a product, maybe the wrong term, but it's more than just a feature. It's a paradigm shift.
Yeah.
And I can talk, and we can talk for a very long time about just how far reaching that could get.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm not going to talk about fucking AGI, right? I don't care about AGI. This is not AGI. It never will be. This is not super intelligence. It's not intelligence at all. It's bloody useful, though. It's a really, really, really good tool, right?
Mm-hmm.
And getting better. And the speed, the pace of delivery from Warp. So I'm only just picked up on AMP. So, but they only started developing it in February this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Nuts.
So that's pretty quick, but I've been noodling with Warp for at least 6 months.
Yeah.
And there was nothing like this 6 months ago, and it wasn't really viable for me until like 3 months ago.
Yeah.
And then they're releasing, well, because I'm on the preview program, releasing, say, 2 to 3 times a week, each time with a step change.
Yeah.
Right? Either in functionality or utility or something, right?
Yeah.
The pace of change here is off the scale. And I think Google just released its own agent, yeah, and they're all going to pile in. And so there's going to be a big bloodbath here. Will Warp and AMP survive? I would prefer they survive than bloody, you know, OpenAI, but I guess we'll find out. But it is a game changer. It is a paradigm shift. It's going to change everything, right, from a technical perspective.
Yeah.
Will that manifest... will manifest in almost certainly faster delivery of technical products to consumers. Will the consumer ever be mindful of the models and using them as a product in their own right? I just don't see it at all. I might be wrong, but I just don't see it.
No, I mean, and this again, as you say, for us, what we're talking about here is, I mean, as you've displayed here, effectively delivering an application and what we know goes behind that and the whole file structure of that. Now, you wouldn't want the end user to see any of that. And what we're sort of saying here is, I can produce all of this effectively at the drop of a hat, you know, in a matter of minutes, hours at the outside. It can do something really useful, and to achieve something, and then, well, that might be the end of it. I've done my 3 things, and I just move on, or you may then build on it further and build it out. The point being is that 3 weeks later, when you look at the next different problem, the new bit of delivery within half a day is not. Well, it is still a proof of concept, but that proof of concept is a whole application layer of code. You know, what previously we would have delivered, I would say, in a note is now going to be whacked out in a sort of fully, as you've shown there, sort of full application set of libraries. Still doing much the same thing, except it would be much quicker, potentially more robust, potentially less robust.
Well, let's see what let's just think about what process I actually went through there. I threw away a whole code base.
Yeah.
On
yeah.
a whim.
Yeah.
Right. Rebuilt it within 18 hours time elapsed.
Yeah.
It came up in a better state than the previous version. It's more robust. It's better tested. It has more process. And this is since, so what we're on Friday. So I think I started working on this on Saturday, last Saturday. So 6 days,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And really, since the first iteration, I've only been poking and prodding, improving this, adding that. There's a few steps back. It's a as I say, I couldn't up arrow, right? So I had made a change to how submitting worked, and it bollocked my up arrow, which I cannot have, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So my next fix will be the up arrow, right? So it's not all been plain sailing, but I mean, that's coding, right? That's dev.
Yeah.
That's how this works. Yeah. And clearly there was a test that needed to be there to ensure that you don't bust my up arrow. But that's insane.
Yeah.
Right? That this is something that if I'd 6 months ago had installed from GitHub, I'd be really happy. Right, this is really good. I just built it on a whim.
Yeah,
and it, and now I'm just like, well, what else can I build?
Yeah, some of the, you know, that guy was mentioning on the podcast is, you can now spin up something like that. And one of the things which really resonated with me was, I need to do some testing. You know, so create some data, 4 or 5 rows, test different things. You know, whack it in. And, actually it'd be good to loop through that, because I've got 4 different categories of, well, so that's now 4 times 5, you know, it starts to get more and more heavy. All right. Okay. So let's have a script that does that. Or wouldn't that be good if it did this? And then he was saying, you know, so give me a free window app where I put the, you know, it tells me what tests I'm running on the left, something else in the middle, something on the right. And he was saying, oh, even just writing that myself, he was obviously thinking of JavaScript and stuff. He was going, oh God, three screen windows, always a pain. But now he can just whack out that test, and in 2 minutes it's written, and now I'm up and running in testing. So I've written code to, as you know, a tool for my other code, which I know I'm just sort of going to throw away or become part of my test suite. And he's, like he said, you know, you could have done it before, but you've got to deliver this thing where I've got to be building features, right? I can't be building code to test those features. Sometimes you do sometimes you get the time, sometimes you don't, you know. Now you can whack it out and do it and kind of throw it away. And I just thought, yeah, why wouldn't you do that? Because it's going to make the whole thing easier.
The implication of that blows my mind.
Yeah.
Right? It really bloody does. And it really suits people like us. It certainly suits me because I'm so bloody fickle. But like we're used to throwing away code. I've got no compunction. Yeah. Just sod it off. I don't care. Right. Move on. I like new stuff. So throwing away code is very natural to us. So I don't have an issue with it. I think some people might find it quite jarring. The other thing is that I don't know how much that costs me on AMP.
Yeah.
But I'll get used to it, and I'll burn, you know, a few tens of quid doing that, right? And then I'll be like, well, okay, I now want an app that I can use to manage my huge photo library, right?
Yeah.
Because I can't actually kind of do it. I really hate iPhoto and everything else I've ever tried. So now I'm like, what do I think that's going to cost, right? And I'm not in the realm of, what, 20 quid, 30 quid, maybe well, much less.
Yeah.
Who knows, right? Well, whatever that number is, you know, maybe it's 100 quid and I don't want to do that. But if I can make sense of it as a command line Python thing for 15 quid, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Because I can then evolve it like and make it exactly how I want, right?
Yeah.
For a few dollars at a time.
Yeah.
If that, right? It could be a few cents, right?
Yeah.
And it's that link between the utility of the thing that you want and the cost that I get when I go, you know, onto Amazon and think, here's a nice new mouse. You know what I mean? What am I getting from this? Well, it's a, you know, 50 quid mouse and there's cheaper ones. So, like, but we understand that exchange, right? But there's and it's fine. There's no issue here. Buy it, don't buy it. But that was never the case with bespoke software,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You can make a value judgment. Suddenly I've got to sign up for some, you know, video editing or photo management software, and it's got a subscription of $10 a month, right? Which is hundreds of dollars a year, when I could just write my own one, right? There's limits to this. I get that, right? But it adds a whole different dimension the value proposition around software.
Yeah.
And that I can start to make serious value judgments against bespoke software that I'm definitely not going to write myself. Let's be clear, I could, I'm just not going to.
Yeah.
Right? Many other things I'd rather be doing, and I'd rather live with the mess of my photo library than spend the time to do it, because I've been down this route before. But now I'm like, actually hadn't thought of that, but now I'm actually thinking now, yeah, is that my next project? I wonder how much that would cost me. And actually, I'm still getting free tokens on Warp Terminal, so it might be free, right? And why, that's mad, right? And for me, it's perfect.
Yeah.
For how I am and my brain, I'm like, this is my world,
right?
And that really disrupts the Silicon Valley model, like badly.
Yeah.
And it, when I start to think about the implications of just this facet, I can't even contain it. My brain wants to explode because I'm like, oh my God. And now this was not the case 6 months ago. And I didn't particularly believe we were going to get this level of agentic coding this soon. Although I don't know why I thought that. I was just being cynical, right? Either way, we're here now and this is good enough. If they stopped now, this is good.
Yeah.
If they don't know other development, this is good enough, but it's moving really fast.
Yeah.
Right. And this is insane, right? This is insane. This is what language models are built for. Does it pay back the 1,000 squillion trillion that Sam Altman has squeezed out of people? I find that highly unlikely.
Yeah.
Is it going to tear down Silicon Valley, destroy his business in the process, and completely reform the whole tech sector? I think it is, yes.
Possibly.
I do think it's going to happen. Well, it depends on how far they can get ahead. There's going to be a lot of bonfires. This is going to be the dot-com boom. It's not what everyone said it was. It's going to be all around agentic coding, because it's now going to be a race to dominate software creation, because everyone else is going out of business. The whole industry is going to have to completely reform itself. And I think they're only just wising up to that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's going to be cataclysmic for our industry. The users, the consumers will notice, but it's not going to be such a big deal for them.
Yeah.
Shareholders are going to be more worried. Shareholders should be really worried. Right, because I don't think OpenAI will survive this. I think that Microsoft will come out the other side of it. I think a lot of these small companies are going to get destroyed when OpenAI inevitably has to put their token costs up.
Yeah,
I think that's going to be the real shakedown. Right?
Yeah,
something big is coming, and it's coming really soon.
Well, on that note, on that bombshell.
Yeah, more apocalypse, and no one's going to die, and I don't think that many people lose their jobs.
Yeah,
but I'm happy in the short term.
Yeah,
burning so much carbon though. We need to come back to the environmental implications of this.
Yeah,
so I've got lots of thoughts on it.
Yeah, it's a real problem. Well, anyway, thanks for taking us through that. It was very interesting. Brains firing off in all sorts of directions. So yeah, they're really good, and we'll come back and talk about the ramifications and our next steps that we've taken next time.
Yeah, well, in a time traveling sense, I'm gonna try and make some sense of that edit.
Yeah.
So, dear listener, you'll be hearing not what we all just heard, but some version of it, which may or may not be like the original, with a bunch of us waiting around in the middle. Oh, I should point out, sorry, that this is important, that process from start to finish, because I called the time out, didn't I, right?
Yeah.
It took us 15 minutes to get that bug fixed, but we lost, I think, at least 3 minutes in the middle, probably four, I think, on it hanging, right?
Yeah.
Which you kind of have to factor in, because that sort of shit's going to happen.
Yeah.
But if that hadn't happened, that would have been sub 10 minutes bug fix.
Yeah.
And I was fucking around because I had to describe stuff to you, right? So it could have been shorter.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go. Right. So I think we might talk about this more in the future.
Yes.
I can see that happening because our whole industry is about to be exploded, which will be interesting.
Yes.
Right. We're done. Let's go off and ponder.
Yes. Thank you very much. Speak to you next time.
Cheers.
It's the confusion matrix. Confusion.